From the nation's capital, this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Ladies and gentlemen, today's show is on domestic violence. It's a hot topic in the news. We wanted to explore what's happening here in the nation's capital. We have three principals sitting before our microphones today. Jose Lopez is a judge. He is the judge, the presiding judge of the Superior Court of the District of Columbia, the Superior Court's Domestic Violence Unit, a position that he's had for several years now. We have William Augusto. He is the director of the Superior Court's Domestic Violence Unit, which means he supervises all staff within the unit and the domestic violence courtrooms. And we have Natalia Otero. She is with DC Safe, an advocacy group, one of the partners in the two domestic violence intake centers. And we want to thank you all for being here. Judge Lopez, William Augusto, Natalia Otero, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Pleased to be here.
Nice to be here.
I'm really happy for you, gentlemen, and Natalia to be here today because, you know, domestic violence is a hot topic in the news. It is something that is of extreme concern. But before we get into the gist of the show, Judge Lopez, just give me a sense as to the domestic violence court within the Superior Court here in the District of Columbia.
Well, it's a specialized unit with four judges handling cases, the civil restraining orders and the criminal cases. We have fantastic staff, well organized, and we do about 5,000 criminal civil restraining order cases a year, and about 3,000 criminal cases a year.
5,000 restraining orders and 3,000 criminal cases. That's 8,000 cases in one city.
That's correct.
For domestic violence, and those are just the cases that are reported to law enforcement.
That's correctly. I mean, the DC Police Department gets about 90 calls a day for domestic violence.
90 calls a day. That's an amazing amount of calls.
It's tremendous. It's
so incredible. Domestic violence is an issue here for us with. In the District of Columbia.
It's a big issue.
All right. And you've been presiding over this court for how long, Judge Lopez?
It's about 7 years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Yes.
And that's got to take its toll on you after hearing, at this point, thousands of cases.
Well, it doesn't take a toll in a negative sense. It just shows me the challenge that we are presented and the difficulty that we have with domestic violence and the need for further education of the community.
Well, and this is one of the reasons why we're doing the program. William Augusto, the director of the Superior Court's Domestic Violence Unit. Give me a sense, William, as to what it is that you do in terms of the Superior Court, specifically as it pertains to domestic violence.
In the DV unit, we process the cases. We create them, the calendars for the judges. We schedule people to be able to get before the court. And that happens when somebody comes in with an emergency request to see a judge that same day, and a couple of weeks later when they return to get an order that would last for an extended period of time.
So in terms of the protective orders, it's up to you to handle the administrative structure to quickly get that protective order.
Correct.
And that's a huge responsibility.
It is one that we take very seriously.
So if that request for a order, protective order, comes in at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you guys have got to scramble to make sure that it happens.
Yes, sir.
All right. And that's an amazing responsibility. Natalia Otero, you're with DC Safe. Give me a sense as to what DC Safe does and your part in this partnership.
Yes, of course. DC Safe is the 24-hour... crisis intervention agency here in the District of Columbia, and we are charged with being available to victims of domestic violence that present at any first responder and to the court. We have a program that's called the Lethality Assessment Program that allows us to try to find the percent of the population that's more at risk for homicide or reassault. And we, once we identify this percentage of the population, we attempt to partner with government and non-government agencies to provide expedited services. So we go on ride-alongs with the Metropolitan Police Department. We have a response line for people to call in. We're able to provide emergency assistance at the courts with filing either emergency orders or civil protection orders. We attend court every single day with clients. We also are able to actually house people within an hour of a violent incident in crisis shelter, which is another kind of important aspect of safety along with the court and the criminal justice piece of it.
You know, it's so common throughout the United States to have domestic violence cases fall through the cracks, and I'm not being patronizing because you're sitting in front of me and because I'm part of the D.C. criminal justice system. But in the District of Columbia, ordinarily, and especially as it applies to the Superior Court, again, I'm not simply being complimentary, I want people out there to know that ordinarily the Superior Court does it well. It doesn't matter what topic it is, whether it's drug court, other specialty courts, the domestic violence court. It sounds as if between yourself, Judge Lopez, and William and Natalia, that you've got it pretty much figured out in terms of how to process the massive number of domestic violence cases that come to the court's attention.
We put significant emphasis on clients' service, and we are constantly struggling to make sure that every case that comes in that door for an emergency order will be seen by a judge that very same day for safety reasons.
And that's important, and that doesn't happen throughout the rest of the country. So what we do in the District of Columbia, we take for granted, but I think we do set a bit of a standard for what's happening throughout the country in terms of domestic violence. Am I right or wrong? William?
You're correct, particularly the development of partnerships that we have created with different stakeholders in the community and other agencies, making sure that we all work together to have a coordinated community response to domestic violence.
Now, I want to get into our personal perceptions on this just for a second. A lifetime ago, when I was with the Maryland State Police, I went to, when it was my first exposure to a domestic violence case, and the woman opened the door, and her head was twice its size. There was blood running down her. A neighbor had called, and the victim insisted that we not take her husband, not remove her husband from that house. And it was obvious a battery. And as far as I was concerned, it was an aggravated assault, which is a felony. I was so affected by that. I never saw my parents fight, let alone hit each other. And I remembered that from henceforth, every domestic violence case that I would ever go on, and one of them involved a shooting, an attempted shooting, that these are terrible, tragic events in the lives of human beings. We see the words domestic violence, and I'm not quite sure it really carries the true impact as to how destructive this act is. So I just wanted to, for three people who have been involved with the issue of domestic violence for years and years and years, give me, Judge Lopez, I'm going to start off with you. How does it affect you after all these years on the bench?
Well, I have learned a lot about what domestic violence is. And you know what? Those cases with a bloody head, those are minimal compared to those that you don't see any blood, and there's a lot of human suffering. There are a lot of destroyed family. There are a lot of depressed children and depressed family members that go out on the street every day and just don't have a solution to their problem. And like that lady who would not want her husband arrested, we have the complexity that there's a certain attachment, and it's difficult for them to just get him out of the house or to have him arrested because they're interdependent with each other. So mm-hmm. That creates a greater complexity in those cases.
This is something that has an enormous impact, not just on the victim, but the victim's family, the larger community. It's not unusual at all to have kids involved. William, let me ask you the same question. You've been working this beat for quite some time. Do you ever just get frustrated at the larger issue of why people batter other people?
Of course it can be frustrated, but we have to keep in mind domestic violence cases are crimes committed against a vulnerable individual. Mm-hmm. A crime is a crime. We need to make sure that we do not forget domestic violence is not a different action, but we have to make sure that we look at them as crimes, that people don't forget that mm-hmm. although these individuals are related, the act that is committed needs to be treated as and handled as a crime.
Natalia, you're with DC Safe. You specialize in domestic violence cases. Certainly you have an opinion on all this.
Yes. I mean, I think what's important, really, and I think something that Judge Lopez said kind of made me think about this, and that is that in addition to kind of the complexities of the relationship, there's also a complexities in how many systems a victim may have to access in order to make herself safe, and that we have to be sure that we are keeping our word. And William said, this is a crime ultimately, and the important thing is to make sure that we have the appropriate multidisciplinary response to it, because what happens when a victim reaches out and she finally is ready, but the abuser may be knocking on her door the next day because he was released, or, you know, it has to be dealt with on multiple levels, not only through the courts, but through the criminal justice system and through organizations that provide supportive services and housing to these victims and to the children.
But this is a process oftentimes of, and I'm going to be stereotypical here, but I believe it to be true, mostly male perpetrators against female victims, although I do know that women can and do batter men, that this is something ordinarily that's taken place over a course of months or years. This is something that she ordinarily has had to suffer through for a long time, until the point where somebody actually calls the police, whether it be a neighbor, whether it be a friend, or whether it be itself. This is something that is filled with emotion, a long-term event, and something that, once again, is really devastating, not only to, generally speaking, the female victim, but the kids involved, and it's not unusual for kids to be involved. Natalia, I'm going to let you continue with that answer.
Yes, I definitely think that that is something that feeds into the response that a victim has about their own abuse, but also their own perception of risk. And that's really important, because we're not in the relationship. And I think it's also kind of crucial to understand that there are factors there that are creating the situation where the victim is thinking that they need to, that they're mitigating the situation. And a lot of times that has to do with not involving the police, mm-hmm. with acquiescing to certain things, with, you know, keeping maybe like walking on eggshells, so to speak, but they're mitigating their risk with their responses, and sometimes the way that they mitigate the risk doesn't make sense to an outside person.
This is a very overwhelming event in the life of that victim. I mean, this is something that is almost paralyzing. People always ask me, why doesn't she leave? This is a very paralyzing event. Her kids involved, her economics involved, there's her own safety involved. And so I want to take some of the pressure off of victims a tad to say that oftentimes, again, it's paralyzing. Generally speaking, the female victim just doesn't know what to do. Your Honor, did you want to take a crack at that?
Well, that is just the most significant point of it all. The victim, especially the female victim, usually, it's not so much that she doesn't know what to do, it's that she's juggling all these things and trying to balance the safety of herself, the economics of her situation, the safety of her children, and she's making the best decision she can under those heavy-duty emotional circumstances. Mm-hmm. And it takes a very long time to finally get a clear head to say, I must leave this relationship.
The bottom line, and the question goes out to all three of you, the bottom line is that we want anybody who has any information about domestic violence to get involved in reporting it to law enforcement, so then the Superior Court and any court throughout the United States can take appropriate action, right? We desperately want people to report acts of domestic violence.
Appropriate action is correct.
Okay. I hear you. Hear you loud and clear. All right. Within the District of Columbia, I complimented you all before. You've got two domestic violence intake centers. How do they work? What happens? William?
We have one at the D.C. Superior Court. It's a conglomerate of agencies, community agencies, and government agencies that provide services to the individual when they come to court, particularly those in intimate partner relationships. Mm-hmm. And they get assistance with preparing their paperwork, talking to the police, talking to the prosecutor, requesting support. They get services from the advocacy group that Ms. Otero belongs to, where they will conduct a lethality assessment, trying to determine how likely this person is to eventually be be harmed further by the respondent. They also will talk to them about safety planning, give them referrals for different agencies that provide either counseling, legal assistance, housing. And lately, some new partners have joined in who will help with doing a forensic medical examination, getting some photographs, and preparing the evidence for a future hearing. And another agency is working with victims that have problems of mental health when they come to visit us.
So you have specialists in all different areas, whether it be forensic mental health, assistance with child-related issues. You have those specialists there to immediately provide assistance to the victim when he or she comes into the domestic violence court.
Yes.
Okay. And that's amazing. I mean, again, most jurisdictions throughout the United States don't have those resources. And the process in the courtroom, do all cases go before a judge or do all cases go to trial?
No, not all cases go to trial. We have what is called attorney negotiators. So when the parties come to a court for the first time, we attempt to negotiate a civil protection order by agreement. Mm-hmm. And many cases will go into an agreement for a civil protection order for 12 months. Mm-hmm. Some few cases will need to go to trial, and the judges are prepared to take them to trial.
Okay. Now, the civil protection order says what to the perpetrator?
Well, the civil protection order, which is in effect a restraining order, it tells the perpetrator that you may not assault, threaten, harass, or stalk the petitioner, and you shall stay away from the petitioner at least 100 feet away from her home, workplace, and also if he needs drug treatment or any mental health treatment, that also is in there. If, in fact, they share residence, we also say to him that he must vacate the residence for safety reasons.
Okay, so there's mental health treatment involved, substance abuse treatment involved. We very specifically say what you can do and what you can't do. And those orders, I think, are supported by my agency, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, as well as the court itself.
Yeah, your agency is extremely helpful in this respect because they monitor the compliance with the civil protection order, which is one of the few jurisdictions that has that luxury. Mm-hmm. And so they even have vocational training for some of the people that need it. And if they don't go to the mental health or the drug treatment, CISOSA, the Court Services Agency, will inform us about us so we can bring the case to court to try to correct the issue.
And if necessary, we can put that person on GPS monitoring and monitor that person's whereabouts 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and figure out whether or not he is violating that order.
Correct.
And if he violates that order, we immediately bring that case to the attention of the court.
Okay. Right, and I think there's another step that CISOSA is actually working on directly with DC Safe as part of the lethality assessment project. Mm-hmm. Let's say that a victim calls the police or somebody calls the police comes out, realizes it's a domestic case, they call us immediately, we send somebody out to meet with the client and provide immediate services and a lethality assessment. We then are providing information with the client's request to CISOSA and saying this is a high lethality case, they can then turn around and say, oh, well, that particular person is already under supervision, and we have certain things that then they can respond to. So we're taking care of working with the client and providing those expedited services, and they're on the other end dealing with the person they're supervising in terms of not only holding them accountable, but also in some cases making them aware that they know and creating kind of an intervention plan for the perpetrator.
Go ahead.
In the hope that that will create kind of a broader safety net
victim. We're more than halfway through the program, ladies and gentlemen. We're doing a program today on domestic violence here in the nation's capital in Washington, D.C. We had three people before our microphones. Judge Jose Lopez, he is the presiding judge of the Superior Court's Domestic Violence Unit. He's been there for 7 years. William Augusto, he is the director of the Superior Court's Domestic Violence Unit, which means he makes sure that all things happen at all times. And we have Natalia Otero and and she's with DC Safe, an advocacy group that's one of the partners in the domestic violence program. If you're interested in the work of the Superior Court of the District of Columbia, probably one of the better court systems in the United States, and after 45 years in the criminal justice system, I can think I can say that with authority, www.dccourts.gov, www.dccourts.gov. We want to thank the Superior Court for setting up this program, specifically Leah Gurwitz. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, where do we need to take this discussion now? The civil protection order has been issued. We're talking about all the different agencies that are involved. We're talking about my agency, Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, lots of other agencies. In essence, what we're trying to do is provide a comprehensive resource for, again, I'm being stereotypical here, men are victimized by domestic violence, but generally speaking, it's female victims. What we're trying to do is provide a comprehensive array of programs for the victim and for the perpetrator at the same time, correct?
Correct, because one of the things we need to do is get that education to the perpetrator to avoid recidivism from the domestic violence intervention program, family training, family violence, parenting classes, and so forth.
Now, we have individuals within our community and in any community throughout the United States, so it's not just an issue for Washington, D.C., who feel that they have a perfect right to strike their victim, to strike either their child or their wife or their husband, that this is something, for whatever reason, I'm not going to say it's cultural, I'm not going to say anything. I simply know that there are men who feel that they have the right to strike a woman. And sometimes this is maybe the first time in their lives where they're facing authority figures who are saying, you can't do that. And a lot of times there are drugs involved, a lot of time there's alcohol involved, correct?
Oh, yes. And it's a generational thing. It's an educational thing. You know, one generation after another generation educating each other that violence is correct, that violence upon the children, that violence upon the women is correct. And so it's extremely difficult to get that out of their head. Mm-hmm. That is destroying the family, not only the victim, but also the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people suggest that domestic violence or getting into child abuse and neglect is the heart and soul of many of the problems that we have within the criminal justice system. If that 9-year-old is raised and sees his mother being beaten, that almost leaves an indelible mark upon his psyche for the rest of his life.
That becomes the normal for that child.
Yes. William, did you want to?
And it seems to all be rooted in the sense that this is different, that if you hit your partner, it's different than if you hit somebody on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And culturally, we must make sure that people understand an assault to one of your loved ones is as problematic and is as wrong as an assault to a stranger.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. We have Crime Victims Compensation Program. We have the Court Supervised Visitation Center. These are all components of the Superior Court in terms of domestic violence. Tell me what those mean.
The Supervised Visitation Center is used in those cases where parties share children and the victim would not feel safe having the respondent, the abuser, come into their presence, either pick up the children at their home, mm-hmm, or at a mutually agreed location.
Mm-hmm.
So the court provides a location, a neutral location, where the victim can drop off the children,
mm-hmm,
the respondent can come by and see the children in the presence of a social worker for, mm-hmm, a few hours a week, so that relationship between the child and the other parent continues. Or in cases where maybe it is not necessary to keep that parent from taking the child with them, they can take the child, but they can use that location for pickup and drop-off of
okay.
those children.
All right. And what's the other program, the Crime Victims Compensation Program, there is the possibility that because they are the victim of a violent crime, they can be compensated for some of the expenses that have gone into that victimization, correct?
Correct. Often you have a victim of domestic violence, by leaving a relationship, is going to leave behind their possessions and their resources.
Mm-hmm.
So they may, and other times they're also concerned that the respondent is going to come back to the location where they know where they can be found.
Mm-hmm.
The Crime Victims Compensation Program can provide temporary housing at locations that are confidential. They can provide assistance with medical expenses.
Mm-hmm.
They can provide assistance with counseling for the victim. Mm-hmm. They can also help with getting yourself set up in a new place eventually after you have gone through this process. And for those that want to remain at their own home, they may be able to help you if, for example, the door was broken down by the respondent. Mm-hmm. They may be able to replace that door to make sure that your place is secure.
Okay. I realize that I may have overplayed my hand in terms of my praise of the Superior Court's program, because there are going to be people listening to this program throughout the United States and beyond the United States. These services in one way, shape, or form are available throughout the United States, generally speaking. So I do the message to domestic violence victims in Utah, in Montana, in California, is to still find out what is available to you by contacting your prosecutor's office, contacting law enforcement, or contacting your local domestic violence center. Natalia, saying all that, what is the biggest hurdle for getting victims to come forward and seek help?
Oh, wow. I think every case is different, and I think both Judge and William can, Judge Lopez and William can vouch for the fact that they can be radically different and different things might be going on. I think the biggest hurdle really is information, and I really think coordination of services. When a victim is provided immediate, tangible assistance within the first 24 hours, they are more likely to move forward with criminal cases. They're more likely to move forward with civil protection order hearings, because at least within those first 24 hours, those tangible needs about shelter and safety are being met.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
I think the next big hurdle is then kind of thinking about how do I get myself into a stable situation in the aftermath of this. What does that mean for me? Am I now being connected to other agencies in the city, like the Department of Housing, or am I having to get on TANF, or am I having, you know, there's a lot of things that go into becoming then stable, and there's so many different government entities that are sometimes involved in these.
But the bottom line is, a lot of people out there take a look at those of us in government, and they don't have the highest opinion of us. I've taken a look at some of the surveys, and the point is that I think, especially when it comes to victim services, especially when it comes to domestic violence, but in all other cases, I would say, but what, especially in these two cases, we do care. There are people within D.C. Safe. There are people at the highest level within the Superior Court. There are people at the highest levels throughout this country who want women and those men who are victimized, but particularly women, especially with children, to come forward and that they are going to receive a caring response, not a bureaucratic response, not a harsh response, but they're going to be embraced by the criminal justice system. Judge Lopez?
Oh, yes. And one of the things that we try very hard is in training our judges, training our staff to understand this, to understand when an angry person comes to you, don't let it be contagious, because they're not angry at you. They are angry at their situation. Mm-hmm. And we are prepared to deal with them and work with them and show them that we care.
Mm-hmm. Natalia, we've got only about a minute left in the program. I would imagine the people there at D.C. Safe are not there to get rich. They're there because they're passionate about serving victims of domestic violence and victims of crime.
Yes, that is correct. We're a nonprofit agency, and we have over 25 employees that are very committed to the work, all from different fields, from law to criminal justice to women's studies. And I think the most important thing that we're trying to accomplish really is to be able to create kind of an all-encompassing safety net for victims, and creating a situation where when a victim does reach out, that they get the assistance that they need the first time around, and that it is something that is coordinated and responsive to not only the needs of herself and the children, but also that the offender accountability on the other piece. And it takes an entire system of people, an entire continuum, to be able to provide these services.
Okay, Natalia, you've got the final word. I think the bottom line between everybody in this room and you via Skype, Natalia, is that there is hope for that person who is being abused, and that the criminal justice system is really geared up to help that individual. So I want to thank everybody who's been at our microphones today, Judge Jose Lopez, William Augusto, and Natalia Ortero. Thank you all very much for being here. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to us. This is DC Public Safety. We want everybody to have themselves a very, very pleasant day.